As we begin today, I'd like to go back to 1 Kings chapter 11, verse number 14, so we can get the context again of this final phase of King Solomon's reign. We know that he's had a great reign. He was a man after God's own heart early on. He asked for and received God's wisdom to govern the people. He built God's temple. He built a magnificent palace complex. He published the book of Proverbs with all the wisdom literature that's involved in that. He has got people coming in from far, far away wanting to see the things that he's done and hear his wisdom and test him. People like the Queen of Sheba. And you remember that she said it took her breath away, that it wasn't even, she hadn't even been told half the wonders of what existed in the Solomonic kingdom. But unfortunately, Solomon has been gathering wives to himself, got about 700 of them by now, and 300 concubines. He's been multiplying chariots and horses to himself, and he has now begun to worship the gods and the goddesses of his pagan wives. In fact, he's built complexes for them over on the southern portion of the Mount of Olives, right across from the palace complex and the ancient city of Jerusalem. And so we've got pagan ceremonies happening on Israeli soil within sight of the temple and palace complexes. It's just a sad situation. And so this is all happening, I believe, right around the 35th year of Solomon's reign. And God does exactly what God warned, and that is, if you abandon the covenant, if you go after other gods and goddesses, I will abandon you. In fact, I will start raising up adversaries against you. So 1 Kings 11:14 says, "He who is raised up an adversary against Solomon, Hadad the Edomite." So Edom is on the southeast corner of Solomon's kingdom and had been a tributary to Solomon. But it ends up that a guy who had been part of the original royal family when David kind of took over the area, he has now grown into full adulthood, and he has decided, seeing Solomon kind of acting much more like a tyrant in his later years, to fight against Israel and get Edom back into its independence. So here's his story. It says he was of the royal house of Edom, for when David was in Edom, and Joab, the commander of the army, went up to bury the slain, he struck down every male in Edom. For Joab and all Israel remained there 6 months until he had cut off every male in Edom. And this goes back to apparently a sneak attack by the Edomites against David's kingdom. And David's response was to go in and do great strong reprisals against the Edomites. And he had Joab take care of this, including an attempt to wipe out the entire royal family, which may have been at the center of this sneak attack. So verse number 17, "But Hadad," who is only a child at the time, "fled to Egypt together with certain Edomites of his father's servants," Hadad still being a little child. "They set out from Midian," so Midian is next door to Edom, "and came to Paran, and took man from them with them from Paran, and came to Egypt to Pharaoh, king of Egypt." Now, my best guess, based on the chronology that I work with, is that young Hadad escaped the Davidic and Joabic reprisals against Edom during the later reign of a man named Pharaoh Mekhebri, who reigned according to the Egyptian records from about 1045 to 992 BC. And so I believe during this, this is the late 21st dynasty of Egypt, that that's when Hadad arrived in Egypt. And because he's a part of the royal family of Edom now in exile, the Egyptian pharaoh, verse number 18 says, gave him a house and assigned him an allowance of food and gave him land. And Hadad found great favor in the sight of Pharaoh, that he gave him in marriage the sister of his own wife, the sister of Tapenes, the queen. And so as Hadad grows up, Pharaoh, either the one that he came to or one of his sons, late in the, I think it's the 21st dynasty of Egypt, decides to form an alliance with this man, probably with the intention that he will eventually go back to Edom and take control of his country, and then there would be an Egyptian alliance already in place when that happened. And perhaps the dynasty in Egypt, looking at David's growing dynasty, and then after him, Solomon's dynasty, would have wanted to have Edom as an ally to kind of balance against the Davidic and Solomonic kingdom. Now, this Tapenes, you're not going to find her anywhere in the Egyptian records, and I think there's a good reason why not. Tapenes doesn't seem to be a proper name, but rather it is a Hebrew representation of an Egyptian phrase that means literally wife of the king. So it's not actually the name, but rather the title for the pharaoh's wife. So anyway, Hadad marries into the royal family. Verse 20, the sister of Tapenes, or the wife of the king, bore him Genubath, his son, whom Tapenes weaned in Pharaoh's house. And Genubat was in Pharaoh's house among the sons of Pharaoh. So the presumed prince of Edom, even though he's in exile, is being raised as a member of the royal Egyptian household. Verse 21, when Hadad heard in Egypt that David slept with his fathers, and that Joab, the commander of the army, was dead. Now, we know the time for that. That would have been 978 BC. And it was during the final years of the Egyptian pharaoh Pinedjem the second. And you can find him in the Egyptian records. So once David is dead and Joab is dead, Hadad is now grown up. He's got his son and a royal Egyptian wife, and he is now wanting to go back to Edom. He wants to go back to his home country. So he said to Pharaoh, "Let me depart, that I may go to my own country." Pharaoh said to him, "What have you lacked with me that you're now seeking to your own country?" And he said to him, "Only let me depart." So Hadad leaves Egypt and goes back to Edom and presumably lives in Edom throughout Solomon's good years. And he's either unable because of the popularity of Solomon, or perhaps he's totally uninterested in regaining his throne at this point. But the moment that God's displeasure starts being shown against Solomon, which I believe is toward the end of his own reign, Hadad begins acting against Solomon. And it also might be tied in with the change in the Egyptian dynasty. because a new dynasty comes to power right around the middle of the 940s BC. And so that means that Hadad's connections to Egypt are now kind of broken, and he's on his own. But he sees the opportunity with other trouble rising on the borders of Solomon's kingdom to maybe start throwing out there the idea that he is a member of the royal family of Edom, the original royal family, and he ought to be reigning the independent Edom rather than it being tributary to Solomon the tyrant. And that's how Solomon really was being perceived in the later years of his reign, by the way. And we will see that in the way that the Israelis themselves treat him. So now we go to another of the adversaries that God raises up at this time. Verse 23, God also raised up an adversary to him, Rezon, the son of Eliada, who had fled from his master, Hadadezer, king of Zobah. And so here's another backstory from David's time. This man's career began when David put down the Zobah rebellion against David during the Ammonite War, right around the same time that Solomon was born. It's possible that this Rezon disagreed with the submission of Hadadezer of Zobah to David after he suffered a defeat at the hands of David's army. So Rezon strikes out on his own. Verse 24, it says that he gathered men about him, and he became leader of a marauding band. So he becomes a gang leader, and they go and probably steal things from different places up in Aram, up in the northern portions or northern borders of Solomon's reign. Then it says that they went to Damascus and lived there and made him king in Damascus. Now, I believe that likely happened in the later portion of Solomon's reign. We've got to get this understanding in our minds that once Solomon started feeling God's displeasure, Solomon becomes very tyrannical. And once he starts becoming tyrannical, there is trouble all over his kingdom. And that would have been understood by people such as Rezon, who would then see it's his opportunity to start pushing forward his own agenda. So he goes to Damascus, which would have been a city on the very border, the northeast border of Solomon's territory, and sets himself up as king, and probably has some border skirmishes with Solomon. It says, verse 25, that he was an adversary of Israel all the days of Solomon, doing harm as Hadad did, and he loathed Israel and reigned over Syria. So that means in the last 5 years or so of Solomon's reign, he is having trouble on his southeast border and trouble on his northeast border, or his northeast border. Then we find out that he has trouble inside the borders of his kingdom. And this is the much more serious incident. And it introduces a character of great importance for the next part of our story. Verse 26 says, Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, an Ephraimite of Zeredah. So the territory of Ephraim is north of Judah. It's right on the border with the Galilee region. And Zeredah seems to be a place down in the Jordan Valley. So he is a servant of Solomon. So he works for Solomon's kingdom, whose mother's name was Zeruiah, a widow, and he also lifted up his hand against the king. And this is the reason why he lifted up his hand against the king. So now we find out his backstory. Solomon built the Milo, and that seems to be kind of a reinforced stepped wall along the eastern side of David's ancient palace. And then he closed up the breach of the city of David, his father. And we'd read about these earlier, that once Solomon had finished with the temple and with the palace and walling in that whole new section of Jerusalem, he then started renovating old Jerusalem and reinforcing wall sections and building up old buildings to make them look better, to make them match better the newer part of his city. That takes a lot of work, takes a lot of laborers. And verse 28 tells us, the man Jeroboam was very able, and when Solomon saw that the young man was industrious, he gave him charge over the forced labor of the house of Joseph. Now, earlier in Solomon's kingdom, we were specifically told that Solomon had pressed into service, that is, had drafted into his construction forces, non-Israelis, Canaanites and Philistines and other peoples of that sort, and that genetic Israelis, native Israelis, were excused from such labor. But now here we are in the later part of Solomon's reign, and he has become so insistent that his kingdom be built the way he wants it to be built and to be left the way he wants it to be left, that he starts drafting Israelis into service. And so a lot of the people that he's drafting are from the northern tribes. And part of the northern tribes would be Ephraim and Manasseh, the house of Joseph. And those would be the closest where Solomon is doing a lot of this building work at Jerusalem and in Judea. So he hires Jeroboam to be the man in charge of all that drafted labor. And the people are not happy. The people are grumbling. The people are starting to feel the need to get rid of this tyrant son of David, known as Solomon. So everything's soured now. Everything is falling apart. And God, of course, is against Solomon because of his sinfulness. And so he specifically picks Jeroboam as an adversary to Solomon. Verse 29. At that time, when Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem, so he's leaving Jerusalem, going apparently to check on the drafted laborers from Ephraim and Manasseh, the prophet Ahijah the Shilonite found him on the road. Now, if you go north out of Jerusalem into Ephraim territory, Manasseh territory and Ephraim territory, you take the road that goes by Shiloh. Now, you might remember Shiloh was the place where the tabernacle used to be located in the early years of Israel. And so it's a special holy site. And there is a man living there who is a prophet. And he's an older man, we'll find out later, but he is sent by God to meet Jeroboam as he passes by Shiloh. Continuing, now, Ahijah had dressed himself in a new garment. So he was told to specifically put on a brand new set of clothes. And then the two of them were alone in the open country. So he's met with Jeroboam and has asked that they have a private conversation. And as they talk privately, verse 30, Ahijah laid hold of the new garment that was on him and tore it into 12 pieces. So he reaches up and rips his new clothing. Now, that's symbolic just by itself, because ripping your clothing is an ancient demonstration of grief and sorrow and horror and revulsion. So he rips his garment, and having ripped it once, he then continues the ripping of it until he's ripped it into 12 different pieces. Now, this is all very symbolic, because the United Kingdom of Israel is really not all that old. We had 20 years underneath Saul, and then 40 years underneath David. And now we are toward the end of 40 years with Solomon, and Solomon's kingdom has been the climactic moment, the zenith of this new kingdom of united Israel. But now the kingdom is being ripped up, it's being ripped apart because of the actions of Solomon. So Ahijah said to Jeroboam, "Take for yourself 10 pieces. For thus says he who is the God of Israel, behold, I'm about to tear the kingdom from the hand of Solomon and will give you 10 tribes. But he shall have one tribe for the sake of my servant David, for the sake of Jerusalem, the city that I've chosen out of all the tribes of Israel." Now there's some questions to be asked here. 10 and 1 adds up to 11, not 12. And if we're going to get picky about it, there's actually 13 tribes, because Manasseh and Ephraim represent Joseph, who was one of the 12 sons of Israel. So the main tribe in the southern kingdom that we're talking about here is going to be the tribe of Judah. But Judah automatically has associated with it the tribe of Simeon. And so it's almost as if Simeon doesn't exist as its own tribe from this time period onward. Then we have the tribe of Benjamin, which is a border tribe between Judah on the south and the northern 10 tribes of Israel to the north. And it's actually going to kind of waver back and forth between the two places, almost like some of the border states during the American Civil War. So when we talk about the tribe of David, that's Judah. And the reason why it's being pulled away is explained by Ahijah. Verse 33, because they have forsaken me, that is, not just Solomon, but all the tribes of Israel are already starting to engage in the worship of other gods and goddesses. Because if Solomon's doing it, everybody else thinks it must be okay to engage in. Because as a leader is, way too often his followers are. So because they've forsaken me and worshipped Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, so that's the mother goddess, the queen of heaven, Chemosh, the god of Moab, and Milcom, the god of the Ammonites, and that's the twisted view of God when he destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, and how the descendants of Lot, through his two daughters, came into existence through a drunken bit of incest. So those two cultures had started worshiping a destroyer king god. And they did it by getting drunk, intentionally getting some of their women pregnant, and then burning up the children from the last ceremony. Because these babies that are conceived in these ceremonies are basically considered sacrificial animals. That's it. They had no intention for a life greater than that. So the Israelis are actually engaging in that sort of stuff too. Solomon has built facilities to let that happen. And so he continues, "They've not walked in my ways, doing what is right in my sight, and keeping my statutes and my rules as David his father did. Nevertheless, I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand, but I will make him ruler all the days of his life," which are not very much left, "for the sake of David my servant whom I chose, who kept my commandments and my statutes. But I will take the kingdom out of his son's hand and will give it to you, 10 tribes. Yet to his son I will give 1 tribe. And then David my servant may always have a lamp before me in Jerusalem, the city where I've chosen to put my name. And I will take you, and you shall reign over all that your soul desires, and you shall be king over Israel. And if you will listen to all that I command you, and will walk in my ways, and do what is right in my eyes by keeping my statutes and my commandments as David my servant did, I will be with you and will build you a sure house as I built for David, and I will give Israel to you, and I will afflict the offspring of David because of this, but not forever." So God authentically, genuinely offers to Jeroboam the northern kingdom of Israel as his right, if he will just worship God, just keep the covenant. But he doesn't. But that's another story. And the next thing that we know is that Solomon finds out about this meeting, about this prophecy, and Solomon therefore sought to kill Jeroboam.